So welcome, Lynn, Adelaide Chronicles, and I look forward to hearing the next chapter.
All right. Well, this section is focusing on my teacher's college years, but initially I've just got a few random thoughts that came to mind when planning it. Partly thinking about my choice to be a teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher, but the choices that we had in growing up were teaching nursing.
Yeah, yes.
And thinking back to my dad, who was ultra-conservative, but I guess progressive in the sense that he didn't anticipate his girls, well, three girls and then, oh wonder, oh joy, the boy. He didn't just think, right, well, the girls will hang around at home until someone snaps them up and they get married and never work. So he did at least see that we should have a career, but like I said, limited very much to nursing and teaching. The sister that comes after me went nursing, and my other sister, younger sister, was a high school teacher. So, yes. And I'm trying not to be unkind, because he was a good dad and thoughtful and involved. But part of me thinks that the reason for wanting his girls to be educated was that he knew there wasn't enough land for more than one family. And the son and heir, we've got to inherit, don't we? So you need to ensure that your girls are sorted. That sounds a bit mean, but I think there's some truth in that.
Oh, absolutely, and it was a sign of the times, wasn't
it? Yes. And thinking back to as we were growing up, we three girls got our little bit of pocket money that was enough to buy some lollies and maybe put a little bit aside for presents for people or for the royal show. And my sister after me and I used to go and pull wool off of dead sheep that Dad would then sell to some bloke that came around and paid for the wool. And that was to save up for the show.
How did you pull it off?
Well, we used to get these bits of fabric and douse it in eucalyptus and tie it around our faces because the smell of dead sheep is hideous, and then just literally pull it off and shove it in a bag. It's gross. And even today, if I'm driving in the country and the smell of a dead sheep wafts in the window, all these images come back to me. Maggots. But we did it. Did it. Now, my brother, who was almost 10 years younger than I, Dad taught him how to plant and do all the work involved in growing a paddock of wheat. And then he got the proceeds, didn't he? So, you know, the resentment festers even today.
So you didn't get any share of the land?
No.
Or the house at all?
No. And Dad died intestate, so Ken paid the gift tax and got the farm.
Yeah.
The other random thing I want to talk a little bit about was I recently reread Jane Caro's Accidental Feminist.
Oh.
And I think that book really was written for our generation, and my head was like the dog in the back of the car that nods when you go over a bump. Everything she said, I could remember feeling exactly the same and having the same experiences. Brilliant book. I liked particularly her comment that it was half the population striving to be taken seriously. The patronising of women is revolting and frustrating and infuriating. Her comments about the invention of the pill and of tampons. I had my first period very young. I was 11, barely 11, and still in primary school. And at Maitland Area School, you had the the primary toilets and the high school toilets. So if you had your period, you had to go into the high school toilets to access the facilities to dispose of the pads that they were at that time. So the humiliation for an 11-year-old going there and thinking everybody knows, it was awful. And yes, and I remember they weren't very effective, those pads. I remember having to play sick because there'd been leakage in the uniform. Oh, just vile. So tampons, I agree, huge step forward. And the invention of the pill was around about, or became readily available when I was just sort of starting to go out with boys and wanted to protect yourself from unwanted pregnancy. And I remember having to shop around to find a doctor who would let me have the pill. At this stage, I think I may have been engaged to Don, but you were still treated like you were a slut for wanting it. Yeah. So those are some random thoughts. And now, back to the chronology of Lynn's life. So, it's 1969. I've done well in matriculation and won a teaching scholarship. At that time, there was a huge shortage of teachers, so the financial incentive to get more people to train meant that I could just support myself on the teaching scholarship. My parents organised a place at Mary Seymour's Girls Hostel, which is in Tint Street, North Adelaide. It's still there, but it's no longer a hostel. Very gracious two-storey old building. It was run by the Methodists, and the matron was a 4'10" dictator whose job it was to protect the virtue of the girls in her care, most of whom were from the country, and to make money for the Methodist Church. So it was a normal-sized bedroom, but there were three of us in there. So once you put the three beds in, there wasn't much room to do anything else. The food was really basic. There was a lot of donations, and generally we liked the donations because it would be stale buns and bread from the bakery over the road, and when that's toasted it's quite tasty, better than the food that they provided. We often, because we were girls, the food was fairly important, we didn't want to get fat, so we often signed out for meals and bought our own. Very shrewd for if you're looking at making money. And to this day, the thought of prunes and stodgy rice pudding turns my stomach. That was the staple dessert. So we were a horde of country girls, most of us naive, inexperienced in sex, politics, and the realities of modern life. I was such a child. I feel embarrassed to think of me at that age. But we had fun. We played jokes on each other in the hostel. You can imagine a bunch of girls together. We shared our highs and lows, and we began to make advances to the boys. I remember there was, remembering how naive I was, over the road and down a bit there was a brothel, and some of the more worldly wise girls would look out the window and laugh at the comings and goings. I had no idea what a brothel was and why it was the butt of their humour. It wasn't till later that I looked back and thought, oh, that's what they were on about. Now, in Archer Street, which is the next street over from Tint Street, it's a boys' hostel, also run by the Methodists. So once they learnt that they attended the local church, we suddenly became very pious. And we would go to church on Sundays so we could...
Which church would you go to?
It was a Methodist church, and and it was just around the corner. It might have been in Archer Street. I know it was close walking distance, but all I remember is the ogling the boys and trying to hook up. I went to Western Teachers College, and at that time there were two sections. There was a bit on Hindley Street, and there was another section on South Road. So I guess kilometre and a half distance, and I was living on a very small scholarship, so I used to walk between the colleges, because of course you don't organise it so that all your lectures are in the one spot.
Yeah.
So I was constantly having to go back and forwards, and I didn't want to waste money on buses. And I remember it was an opportunity to read. The number of people I bumped into, at one stage, I crashed into a bus shelter, because when you're reading, you don't look where you're going. So just a silly memory.
You'd read as you were walking.
Yes, yes. Well, you can't waste any time, no. I was so naive. My knowledge was so limited, and I don't think my mum knew much more, because when she did her best, she gave me the book when puberty was approaching. But I remember having biology lessons and finally understanding why couples were surprised and celebrated pregnancy. Before that, I thought, well, you did it and you were pregnant. So that's pretty ignorant. And I also remember learning about homosexuality and educating my mother about what it is and what went on. It's really a bit sad, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, that was the situation. I also remember an inspiring series of lectures on future education. The predictions the lecturer made about pollution, climate change, the inequality of income, capitalism, was so prophetic and so accurate, I've never forgotten them. And I think of all the lectures that I did at Teachers College, that one had the most impact and was the most lasting. Some of the other lectures I may have slept through once you discover boys and go out and about.
Yes.
Sleepers are a very scarce commodity. So I developed new friendships with the women whose surnames began with J, K or L, because we were organised alphabetically, you see. And my political awakening began through a friendship with a strong, loud, streetwise woman called Louise Cater. The project that I later became involved in, through a chain of circumstances, we reconnected, which was one of the special aspects of that project.
How long after?
It would be 50-odd years. I mean, we were 17, 18-year-olds, and we did a couple of years together at Teachers College, and then she went off elsewhere and didn't see her again, much as I tried, so that was very exciting. She exposed me to the horrors of Vietnam, apartheid, and to the precepts of women's liberation. She was a very streetwise young woman, and there was no going back from that. And my eyes were open, and so you start seeing the world differently, and I guess reading materials that you would have overlooked in the past. Now, incidentally, Louise was Jewish, of a quite strongly Jewish family, and I remember with some embarrassment and horror my father's reaction. Again, naive. I didn't have any knowledge about the Jewish question and Zionism and so on. I took Louise home for a visit, because that's what he did, and I couldn't understand Dad's hostility towards her and his warnings about our friendship until much later when I understood the issues. And I feel, again, not wanting to do my father a disservice because he was basically a nice bloke, but that entrenched racism is really terrifying.
Yeah. And did she feel it? Was it obvious?
Well, we didn't discuss it. A lot of his warnings would have been, take me aside and I don't know about this friendship. Yeah. Yes, she may have, because I guess you grow up with the anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I repeat, it's 1969, first man on the moon. When that happened, I was doing prac teaching at Norwood Primary on the day that they landed on the moon, and I remember it was just such a big deal occasion. The school hired a television in those days. Schools didn't have TVs. Homes didn't have them. And there were lots of delays, so the entire day was spent sitting, waiting for it to happen. Yeah, big moment in history.
Huge moment in history. Yes. I remember it too.
Yes. Now, Norwood Primary was an interesting experience. The DEM teacher, as they were called, demonstration teacher, I don't know how old she was, but to us at 18 she seemed ancient.
Mm.
And her name was Miss or Miss or Mrs. or Ms. Cross. And it really fitted her because she was a grumpy old bag. And you went out in pairs and they would organise a child's desk for you to sit at, and you'd sit there, in my case, bored to tears, watching her demonstrate her teaching until it was the moment when you did your DEM lesson, where she would watch and take notes. I remember my first lesson was PE, and they had all those prefabs with spaces underneath, and the kids went a bit wild, and all the balls went under the building. Oh my goodness, it was such a disaster. But I did improve with time. But my first lesson was horrific. I also remember I did a lot of my own sewing in those days, and I'd made this U-Butte slack suit to wear. Right? So I remember it was green tartan, and it had jacket sort of halfway between knee and hip, and the trousers. Well, Ms. Cross took one look and was aghast. Women don't wear trousers, do they? She made me take the trousers off, because the coat did cover your bum, and I was made to teach the rest of the day like that. And it was utterly ludicrous, because every time you wrote on the blackboard, the jacket had come up and your undies would be on display, but no way were you going to wear trousers. They were for men, not for women. Isn't that crazy?
It just is.
Absolutely crazy. Okay, so I had 3 years of teachers' college, and there were lots of positive memories from, especially in that first year. Louise kept me informed, motivated, and helped me to grow up. But she was such a character, and I have to record this anecdote that I remember. She had a car, so she was very privileged.
Yeah.
And she'd take us here, there, and everywhere in the car. But she also wore glasses, which she constantly lost or left home. And I can remember her driving up Hindley Street and asking myself and the other girls whose names started with JK or L to let her know when the lights turned red, because she didn't have her glasses and couldn't see. I don't know how we survived, but we did. Another memory is smoking. It was such a rite of passage for us in that era, and most of my friends smoked. I never did. I grew up with a father who had roll your own, whose fag would hang out of the corner of his mouth, whose teeth were sort of greenish yellow from the nicotine, and who stank like a chimney stack. It was so disgusting. I never had any desire to smoke. He also must have been aware that it was a bad habit, and at one stage made me smoke a cigarette, and I was violently ill. And my two sisters and brother, none of us have ever smoked. So that's a way of stopping it, is to look disgusting. But when we came to the city, Dad had the tailor-made cigarettes, so he'd have a packet of ciggies in the glove box that he only used when he came to the big smoke. They were so stale that I can remember the cigarette sort of having a bend in it. But otherwise, it was roll your own. And I used to buy the tobacco for him when I went shopping. I was a kid.
Yeah.
But no rules then. Now, the highlight of my teacher's college years was the end of year after all the exams were over. There was an elective to do children's theatre, and each of the 3 years I took that on, and we would develop a play and practice it and then take it out to schools in the area. It was wonderful. You learnt how to relate to an audience. You'd go to a stiff and starchy place where the kids weren't allowed to step out of line, and you'd have to whoop them up. Or you'd go to the northern area where they were climbing the walls and hanging from the lights, and you had to calm them down. It was a really valuable experience.
Did you choose what topic you...
That was whoever organised the electives.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was probably related to what you could get cheap.
Yeah.
They were just children's stories
that
we performed. My only complaint is that I always got the biggest part with the most lines, but I was always the boy or the non-glamorous role, and the princess was always some gorgeous girl.
Yes.
And during that time, Gabrielle Clark and Sue Barron both were going through Teachers College at the same time as me. And, you know, they were both entrants in Miss South Australia and Miss Australia, and Sue Barron went on television, and they were beautiful girls, so I couldn't compete. But you'd think if you had the non-glamorous role, at least you shouldn't have the most lines to learn. In my first year of doing children's theatre, there was a dragon involved, and they had this fantastic dragon costume. So I persuaded the owner of the dragon role to come with me, and we went to the Bank of New South Wales, I think it was called there. It's now Westpac, where my then-to-be boyfriend and later husband worked, and went into the bank in costume with this dragon in near my boy costume. Don never quite got over it. Yes, it was fun. Okay. 1970, I moved out of the accommodation, the Methodist hostel, and moved to board with my beautiful but ultra-conservative Auntie Vida. She was Mum's auntie, but they were only about 8 years difference in age, so they were more like sisters. She was an interesting lady, just as a sort of a little aside. She had lived through the Depression, and she never got out of the habit of being careful with money. So she'd go out to lunch with her sister, and then haggle over half the bill. There was a 5 pence difference. Who would pay that? And travel all over the place, spending money on bus fares to save money. But the thing that I felt the most sad about was that she had a very unhealthy relationship with sex. And she'd tell me that after she had sex with Uncle Ted, which she saw only as a way of having children, she would go have a shower or a bath and scrub herself clean. I always felt that was very, very sad.
Did she have children?
She had three sons. Yeah. At that time also, my dad bought me a Fiat Bambino. So I felt really special. So I was free and able to travel wherever I wanted. It was such an exciting year. Participation in the moratoriums was, of course, a highlight and a measure of my growing awareness of activism and the ways of the world and injustice. My father was utterly horrified when he learnt that I'd attended a moratorium. To him, ASIO was watching, I was on the list. My future was bleak. There would never be a job. My life was over. I proved him wrong. I didn't participate in any upfront role. I know you were at the forefront, but I was just there walking. But I remember the excitement and the sense of importance that we're doing something that's vital for the world.
And you're with your people.
Yes. Precisely. I remember the horror of seeing the photos of the napalmed children. That I can see the photos like it was yesterday. And again, my naivety had finally been overcome with knowledge. And finally found my voice and able to exercise the power of dissent. It was a very important moment in my life and one that I appreciate and value right through to now. I completed a 3-year diploma of teaching and I did really well. My practice teaching did improve after the disaster of the balls under the buildings. And I always felt that even though I'd not been exposed to other options, that I was born to be a teacher. I loved it from day one till the day I retired. I've always had a creative spirit and a flair for drama, and I think they are fundamental for junior primary teachers. Each year I volunteered in that same role in children's theatre and we took plays all over Adelaide. It was really a great experience too in seeing the way different schools operated and understanding what an impact teachers and leadership can make on the ethos and the spirit of a school. And I preferred that the schools where children were hanging from the lights and overexcited. Yes. I continued to participate in demonstrations throughout my time against my father's advice and explored left-wing politics with some fervour. By this time, Don and I were seriously involved after few experiments with other relationships. Mum would speak with amusement, speaking of the pre-Don period, about the time I was juggling two relationships and they both decided to visit the farm on the same day. Can't remember how I resolved it, but it took some amazing manipulation to get rid of one of them. That's the end of the period I'd planned to say. Do you have any other questions that you want to ask?
literature, sort of, and black literature particularly, yes. was everywhere, and women's liberation. Mm.
Very exciting times.
Very exciting times.
I feel privileged to have lived through it. Mm.
Yeah. And we really, I don't think, have seen anything like that emerge since, in terms of the people all coming together.
Mm. Yes, when you start thinking of all the exciting changes that had worldwide impact, it was an amazing, amazing era. Mm-hmm.